Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
They were who we thought they were. You didn't want to listen to us. Patrick and I were on top of this from the beginning. I want you all to eat some crow, and I want you to put some pepper on it and shove it down your throats because Tom Brady's been vindicated. Hallelujah! Woo!
Tom Brady and the New England Patriots organization, for the record, have been vindicated. I'm reading the full decision now, and Berman expands well past the scope of the actual appeal in his decision, and is really calling Goodell, Vincent, Tash, and the entire NFL league office out to the woodshed.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are not going to spend a whole lot of time on this. We are going to spend a good portion of time on this just to make sure that you all understand that you should be listening to us and not listening to these stupid talking heads that have no clue what they're talking about. But let's rewind back to where we begin. My name is Pod Vader. You might know me as the biggest Patriots homer on the face of the earth. I introduced Patrick. He is our official Patriots super fan. Hello, Patrick. It's a great day today, isn't it?
The sun rose in the east. The birds are singing. It's a good day. It's a good day to be a Patriots fan.
I believe on Slack your direct quote was, "The sun rises in the east and Goodell is overturned once again."
Yeah, I think it was the sun rises in the east, rain falls from the sky, and Goodell's decisions get overturned. These are things that just happen.
Two more super fans are here with us. One who's not going to like me very much at all. That's Ron. He's our Dolphins super fan. Hello, Ron.
What's going on, guys?
I figured I'd couch things for you, you know, so you can prepare yourself for what's about to happen on this show.
Oh, no problem. I'm ready.
And Greg is our Steelers super fan. He's also our pollster. He's been taking a poll of all the super fans so that we can present to you our predictions on who we believe is going to win the Super Bowl, be in the playoffs, and win some of the postseason awards. Hello, Greg.
Hello, Pod. You are one happy guy today.
It's a phenomenal day today. And basically, where we're going to start here, if you didn't know from the way that I was shouting like a lunatic at the beginning of the show, Tom Brady's suspension has been overturned by New York Berman. I forget his first name, but that's not really relevant here, other than Richard M. Richard M. Berman. He'll have a statue erected somewhere in Foxborough for him. The best part about the whole thing here is this was the guy that the NFL handpicked because they thought he would give them a more favorable ruling. Well, you've been reading the ruling. Tell us all about it.
So, to be fair, they didn't pick Richard Berman. They did pick the district.
Sure.
They did pick the federal court district where they would file, and then those judges are assigned to the case. Berman's background, though, is that he's from New York. He went to college in New York. He went to law school in New York. Like, he is a New Yorker. I don't know if it's, according to his Wikipedia page, I don't know if he's ever actually been off the island. but he's hammering these guys. I'm 14 pages into the 40-page decision at this point. And so far, in every instance where he refers to the independent investigation, he puts independent in quotes. That's not necessary, but hysterical. And I'm still really in like the declaration of the facts of the case that are undisputed. And even that looks pretty nasty. The way he's cherry picking what the league has said and what they have done and just declaring them a statement of fact, is pretty damning for Goodell, for Vincent, for Pash, probably Pash especially, to a lesser degree, Ted Wells, but he's just going at him with both barrels. And this is a page turner. I cannot wait to see what happens at the end. But from what I'm reading, not only does it exonerate Tom Brady specifically, like you get said out of the way right at the outset, first line, you know, Tom Brady, you know, free to play. It's detail that he's going into here. It's setting the stage for Kraft to sue if he so chooses. It's setting the stage for Yastrzemski to sue if he so chooses. And this decision is going to be cited probably in like all future NFL labor disagreements between, you know, different members of different players or equipment managers or owners or pretty much anybody else. He's painting a pretty broad brush here in terms of the level of detail that he's going into, that somebody could then cite this decision and say, you know, in this case, Judge Berman said, yada, 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 yada. And hopefully just really strip away a lot of the power of the commissioner's office in general. You know, I talked a lot with the sports gal pal on this, and, you know, she, you know, from her perspective, you know, is looking for harsher penalties for players for domestic violence issues. And it's tough to argue against that. You know, the counter argument to her stance is, well, you can only go by what's set out like as specific punishments in the CBA. And it, as I said on her podcast, if Goodell and the league want to maintain that authority, what they need to do is settle with Tom Brady and let him go. Like, let this one slide. Relinquish their stance on this, because if a decision actually comes out, right, and they lose, which they're more likely than not going to do, and it turns out that was true, then it then becomes a precedent that basically takes away the footing of the league office to deviate from the penalties prescribed in the CBA. They can't do that anymore, right? They're not going to be able to do that going forward. You're not going to get, you know, player X knocking his fiance unconscious in an elevator and get suspended for half the season. You're not going to get player Y beating his kid with a stick, get suspended for an entire season. Those things aren't going to happen anymore, right? Like, that's the downside to this. You can argue, and I have, that the commissioner's office had too much power, but that, I mean, you now have the potential for a lack of confidence in the NFL players. You know, the reputation that we had back in like 2006, 2007 as a league full of villains coming back, because the league is not going to be able to do off the books discipline like this ever again.
There's a lot of different angles here with this story that they're going to impact the game. And I will definitely get to you, Ron and Greg, in just a moment. You know, there are some talking heads that I do respect, and one of them is Andrew Brandt. He's a legal and business expert. He was a former front office man for the Green Bay Packers. Saw him earlier on ESPN say something that the judge in his decision said that the NFL is using a policy as their basis to suspending Tom Brady that doesn't even exist. There is no written policy that they were citing. And to me, that's very interesting. To the degree of these domestic violence issues and other issues, that was another thing that I heard earlier on my talking head station. And that's they were trying to suspend him on the grounds of personal conduct policy, but this really had nothing to do with personal conduct. This had to do with a game, with the rules of the game and tampering of the game.
It's actually even more interesting than that, right? Because the personal conduct policy allows the commissioner to suspend a player for basically reducing public confidence in the integrity of the game. Right. I'm paraphrasing, but that's the clause, right? Is that the player's actions have reduced confidence in the integrity of the game. The people's confidence in the integrity of the game was reduced by this whole scandal, but they're reduced by all the reports that were leaked by the NFL league office, every one of which ended up being a lie, right? That the balls were 2 pounds underinflated. 11 of the 12 balls were underinflated by 2 pounds. Lie. Like, right from like the day after the incident happened, it's just been this never-ending string of leaks to the talking head station, primarily, yes. And those were factually incorrect, is a polite way of putting it. Another way of putting it is lies and misinformation. And Brady didn't do any of that. Patriots didn't do any of that. The Patriots were sending emails to the league's attorney saying, hey, these statements are coming out. We assume they're coming out from your office. Regardless of where they're coming from, you need to reset the record because public opinion is shifting on us and damaging the brand. And the league office is shrugging their shoulders saying, basically, screw you guys. You know, so it's like, yes, that clause is important. Yes, like public confidence in the game was diminished, but they weren't diminished by Tom Brady. It was diminished by these knuckleheads that I don't even know what their motivations are, honestly. Like it's just so crazy, especially when you start reading through court documents on what they've done, the things that they've said and the decisions that they've made. I don't see how rational people that are professional and, you know, have devoted their careers to the development of this league, for the most part, would do things like this. Like, it's insane. This is what, like 14-year-olds would do.
I know that Jeff Pasch is mentioned quite a bit in that document, and I know that the history between the Patriots and Jeff Pasch is not of we're buddies. It's actually been quite confrontational between those two particular parties. And I believe when all is said and the fallout of Deflategate, Balghazi, whatever you want to call it, is going to be the NFL spent millions of dollars trying to make their golden boy into a fall guy. It failed. Roger now looks like a weak, pathetic leader of the most popular sport in America. Close to the world, but I'll let soccer keep that title for now.
He's Nero.
I mean,
he's Nero.
I mean, he has to be. What the owners are going to guess is somehow they have to relieve him of his duty. They need to definitely relieve Steve Pasch of his duty. And I think that quote independent is something that's extremely interesting because if the NFL had indeed run an independent investigation, I think things would have turned out differently for them. The fact was, this was not an independent investigation, and the judge saw that that was the case, and that is why Tom Brady is not suspended. And then on top of that, Tom Brady agreed to a one-game suspension. He was willing to take a one-game suspension for not participating in the investigation or trying to, you know, derail any sort of the investigation, and the NFL refused it.
We don't know how true that is, right? So a report came out that Tom Brady had conceded to a one-game suspension, but we don't know what qualifications were around that, right? And we don't know.
Well, that he wasn't going to agree to, he wasn't going to agree to call himself guilty.
Yes, and we knew that was a non-starter, and there might have been additional qualifications on top of that, like that the NFL would have to concede the entire Welch report, right? So it might not have been that Tom Brady would not agree to call himself guilty. It might have even included that the NFL deny that this Deflategate ever even happened, right? Hypothetically, I don't know that to be true, but I'm saying this happened during a time when you had two parties and you had a judge trying to force force a settlement between the two parties to avoid this decision coming out. And Tom Brady might have, in his party, might have been looking to be more complicit with the judge's orders by saying, hey, you know, we offered, you know, we made a settlement offer and they denied it flatly, right? But without actually knowing the details of the settlement offer, we don't actually know if it was a legitimate settlement offer or if he's posturing to look better in front of the judge. Which is what I would do.
All right, Patrick, you're being way too fair. Ron and Greg.
I have to be the fair and balanced one in this group.
Ron and Greg, I want to bring you in on this.
I got a couple points I'd like to bring
up. Okay, go for it.
So as the guy that this affects the most out of the super fans immediately, because now we have to play against Brady week one, I think you guys
are
a little... I mean, he's guaranteeing playing this year. Like, he's not going to face the suspension. But I haven't read up a lot today, you know, in the last 2 hours or whatever. But, I mean, the NFL is going to appeal this ruling. This isn't done yet.
Of course they are.
Until it's totally done, it's not done. They, like you said, they spent millions of dollars. they're going to just keep going with it until they get the decision they want. Because if they don't, you better see Martavius Bryant, you better see Josh Gordon, Le'Veon Bell, Greg Hardy, all the other guys that got suspended this summer. They better all be up there trying to get their suspensions reduced. And then
let me address that one real quick for you, because the difference between in those suspensions and the one that Tom Brady just got overturned was exactly what I mentioned. Tom Brady was being suspended for the personal conduct policy, but the infraction was for game tampering, had nothing to do with the personal conduct policy. Those other people that you've mentioned have all been suspended under the personal conduct policy or even the drug use policy. And those are already written into the CBA and have been agreed upon between both parties. So my guess is those suspensions, they can try to appeal them. They're not going to go very far.
But what I'm saying is that they got to fight this, because even if they are going to try to appeal
it. Oh, absolutely.
It's so much red tape that they got to deal with it. And my other point is that, you know, James Harrison made this point just this past week, that when the new CBA was approved by 31 of the 32 teams, the Steelers refused to approve the CBA because they thought Goodell had too much power. You know, and like at the time, I remember Ryan Clark and James Harrison being very outspoken about where they couldn't accept the CBA, and they never did officially because Goodell's power went unchecked through the whole thing, mm-hmm. through this policy. And now, so his point was, Brady voted yes for the CBA just recently. So why is he putting up such a fight now?
Well,
I think even though he was found, you know, not to be, you know, his suspension was overturned, in the big PR world, I don't think this helps the Patriots' image at all. I think this just sees that the Patriots got away with something else.
It went wrong.
And Tom Brady's just a big whiner now. That's and
yeah. no,
people
no,
who
no,
hated
no.
Brady have more reason to hate him, and people who are gonna die, you know, keep bragging on him until he, you know, ascends into heaven are gonna do that too. And I'm actually a Tom Brady fan. I've told my wife that I think he's awesome, and I would like to trade places with him because, like, you know, he's got the dream life. But,
you said that to your wife?
I told her, and she totally understands.
He understands. He understands. Yeah.
Definitely think you have a – Patrick, hold on a quick second. Greg, I think you're actually – definitely a segment of the population that is totally going to, they hate Tom Brady no matter what, and they're going to hate him. And I think that's where a lot of this PR started, because that power of suggestion, if you hated Tom Brady and if you hated the Patriots, no matter what was said in that Wells report, you were going to spin it to believe whatever you wanted to believe. Just as Patrick and I believe in Tom Brady, believe in the Patriots, and we were showing you where A and B in the Wells report were not connecting. But nobody wanted to listen to us because, well, we're biased. We're Patriot fans. We can't believe us. I was like, my whole point of the report wasn't if the Patriots did it or not. I still couldn't tell you today if they did it or not. What I can tell you is that in that Wells report, they went from A to B unbelievably. They just said, well, you know, it's more probable than not. Well, and I pointed out it was more probable than not that another situation could have been the case. But because things were leaked and because of the way that everything was handled from the NFL side, and I believe this is where a lot of this judge's ruling is coming into place, the power suggestion and PR went way overboard. Now you have an official judge ruling the Patriots or ruling that Tom Brady's suspension is now overturned. And I believe now there's a segment of the population that is just as easily suggested to that will take this and be like, oh, well, he clearly didn't do it. There's a strong segment of the population. They're going to hate the Patriots no matter what, and you're not going to change your mind. But I do believe a majority of the people that were against the Patriots before are now going to look at this judge's ruling and go, well, they've been exonerated.
Well, I mean, going back to fair and balanced, right? Yes, a fanatic will
refuse to believe what's in front of him or blindly accept what's in front of him. And while I'm a fan, I don't necessarily consider myself a fanatic. I can look at our defensive backfield and see the flaws, and I can look at Tom Brady sliding and going cleats up trying to take out Ed Reed and say, like, that's not a cool thing to do. Like, I'm not blind to the shortcomings of my team. But when I see somebody try and tell me that 2 + 2 = 5, you know, then I'm going to call it into question. And I'm going to say, I can't definitively, well, in this case, I could definitively prove that 2 + 2 does not = 5, but I can't say that it's more probable than not that it does. That's crazy. And only a fanatic would believe that. So, I'm reading through this document. There are two things at play here. One is that there is absolutely no evidence of any kind that these balls were deflated, that there was a conspiracy to deflate the footballs, that Tom Brady was a part of a conspiracy to deflate the footballs. None of those things were actually not only proved, but none of those things have any evidence supporting those claims. Like, there just isn't any. It's all made up, right? And it's like, $5 million into an investigation and court case later, the NFL still isn't able to demonstrate any convincing evidence of any of those things happening other than the conclusions that they did, right? So, again, fiction. The other part is that reading through the technical, you know, issues with this case, and they existed before, Berman's calling him out because he's a judge. They're trying to hang Tom Brady, among other things, on rules that exist only for executives within a team, right? Like this whole thing about off the field competitive, you know, that's the same sort of stuff as piping in crowd noise, which, you know, it's a slap on the wrist, you know, but like nothing that a player should ever be made a part of. And guess what? It's not in the CBA because it's not intended for the players. So you can say that Tom Brady is scooting by on things that are in the CBA. It's not true. What they're trying to hang up. One of the many, many, many problems with this entire process, and there are a multitude of them, is that they're holding Tom Brady liable for something that is not actually in his contract or anybody else's for that matter, right? It's unless you're talking to an executive or an equipment manager or something like that, that clause is in their contracts, but it's not in the player's contracts.
God, this happened in week 4 of the preseason because we were supposed to be, you know, previewing all of these preseason games. We're clearly not going to be doing as in-depth a preview as we've been doing before. Plus, I mean, week 4 of the preseason is pretty irrelevant. But Ron, you're the one guy who hasn't had much to say here. What do you have?
I have nothing. Nothing on the plate, Gabe. Whatsoever. I believe one thing. I believed it before, and I believe it now. I believe one thing. There are three teams represented in this room right now, and I believe that the Patriots are ranked 3rd of those three teams. And whether Brady plays the first 4 games or not, I still believe that.
Ranked how?
Wow.
That's a lot of talk coming from a guy that hasn't won a championship in the span of his lifetime.
Things do change, my man.
I know. Let's cross our fingers and hope you go 8-8 this year. It'll be, you know, an awesome trend.
You should cross your fingers and hope we go 8-8. I'm not worried there, brother.
Okay.
All right.
I'll pull through you to go 8-8 and miss the wild card. That's cool.
All right. So gentlemen and any ladies out there listening, let's get to our week 4 previews. Basically, all we're going to do for a preview is our super fans let us know who were guys that they wanted to see make the cut. You know, all the teams will have to cut down by the end of the weekend to their 53-man rosters, and they'll be able to create their practice squads after that. But there's that one guy that's on everybody's team that they've watched all preseason. They're like, oh, that's the guy. I really hope he doesn't get cut because, you know, he's a bottom of the roster guy, but you really see something special might be there. And so, Ron, we will start with you. As we start, oh, by the way, every game is this evening. So this is the portion of the podcast where you're just listening to see, you know, if our super fans got their deep roster guy right. And then at the end of all this, we'll share our predictions on how we feel the season's go, according to the poll of the superfans. So, Ron, Tampa Bay is at Miami. Who are the deep roster guys we're watching in this game?
All right. Bucks, the Bucks superfan put Chris Hackett at safety, and he also put Josh Keyes at linebacker. He is watching those guys, hoping that they are on the 53 here in another few days. And for Miami, beginning of the year that I know a lot of people didn't have him on the 53, but Terrence Fadeh, who was drafted last year as a seventh-round pick, the first player ever drafted out of Marist College, he's looking like he's going to make the 53 and maybe even make an impact for us this year at defensive end.
All right. Greg, what are our super fans, are the guys our super fans are watching in the Cincinnati-Indianapolis matchup?
Well, our Australian super fan, Simon, is really looking forward to seeing Deshaun Williams again. It's apparently a guy he's been hyping every week, and he's really hoping he makes it. So that would be interesting to go with Geno Smith there, if he does make it. And then Dan, our Fort Wayne Colts super fan, is all about this rugby player from Africa that's been on the roster, on the practice squad for 2 years, Daniel Adongo, who apparently, if he doesn't make it this year, this will be his last shot. And he's hoping to see him excel on special teams and as a rush linebacker. Adongo.
That's interesting. All righty. We've got the Ravens and Falcons up next. Ron, who are we watching here?
The Ravens superfan chose Darren Waller. And Atlanta has Desmond, and make sure I pronounce this right, Desmond Southward are the two guys being watched in tonight's game by the Baltimore and Atlanta superfans.
By the way, when we're talking about deep roster guys, I don't think you need to worry too much about pronouncing the name right.
Good point.
That's just me being mean. Me being mean. All right, Greg, we're at New Orleans at Green Bay.
All right, our most popular superfan, Chase, he is looking for Willie Snead, a second-year player from Ball State, the best of the MAC schools, to make a big run out the roster this year with all their openings. So he thinks that Willie Snead compares favorably to Lance Moore, and he expects or he either expects or Nick Toon was already released. I can't exactly understand, but Nick Toon there, he's out. Nick Toon, that's pretty good. Oh, for Green Bay, I thought it was a Ladarius Gunter, the corner out of Miami. He's been in tight coverage all preseason, and not just against the scrubs. He's actually got some real playing time. So, be interesting, because he apparently did really good work against Martavis Bryant in week two.
All right, Ron, Philadelphia is at the New York Jets.
All right, Mr. Sitko, our super fan there, Kenyon Barner. And Raheem Mostert, he put two deep guys that he's looking to make his Super Bowl winning team even stronger, according to him. And the Jets has Whedon, which actually would make sense too. Probably a better chance now that I believe Jason Morrow is out for a while or for the season. They're tight end. I believe they drafted last year. So
interesting. Greg, we're at Jacksonville at Washington.
And I actually don't see any submissions for those two guys.
Oh, shame. Okay. Feel shame, super fans. Feel shame. Anybody know any guys on Jacksonville and Washington? Or do we even, I mean, I can tell you right now, from my preseason predictions, I went game by game, every game, win-loss, for the season. I have the Reds at 2-14 and the Jaguars at 3-13. So I don't think a deep roster guy is going to save either team.
Will RG3 actually be on the roster? Because if he's on there week one, they're going to have to pay him. And if they're not going to start him and they don't want him breathing down the other QB's backs, why not just let him loose? I mean, that's a possibility. He may not be on the 53.
Yeah, but he's cheap. Like, replacing him would be more expensive than keeping him. I hear you, though. Like, why let him in the locker room?
Yeah, I think it's a chance.
I think he'd be playing in Canada by next year.
Maybe.
I think he's going to be a backup somewhere. I don't know if Canada might be a little harsh. He might belong in Canada, but he's going to be holding a clipboard somewhere.
Get a nasty attitude. Don't want that in your backup.
Greg, Carolina's at your team, the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I also didn't see, for shame, one from Jimmy Six for the Carolina Panthers, so we'll just skip to the
You guys are Steelers. All worried about your fantasy league coming up next week. I mean, come on.
Yeah, they're all
work,
on
people.
That, sure. Priorities, Pod, priorities. So, but we got this quarterback, Fogg, that I think will just fall short because he didn't play well last week. It was he played himself from a undrafted free agent from 2014 onto the practice squad and whatnot. And I thought he was going to make the push to make the roster, but it appears that another corner, we're talking about the fifth cornerback spot, so it's not that big a deal. But, I mean, the fifth cornerback for the Steelers ends up playing against A.J. Green in December, so that's how it always happens.
All right, Ron, are you set with Buffalo at Detroit?
I am not set because I have no submissions. More fantasy fanatics. Not focusing on the real deal here, I guess, Todd.
Sin, people. I'm going to have to... our new Buffalo superfan should know better, although he might have sent me an email. I'll have to take a look. While I'm looking, though, Patrick, I know you have to go, so we just happened to get right to the game, though, that means the most to you, and that's the Giants at the Patriots.
That was edge of my seat to watch the fourth preseason game of the year.
who's the deep roster guy that you're hoping makes the team?
So it's like the Patriots don't have this year anyway, they don't really have a deep roster guy that I'm hoping to make it. Traditionally they have several undrafted free agents that make the team and contribute, which is cool, but this year, for whatever reason, probably injuries, they're real true long shot deep roster guys are either not long shots, you know, because they kind of have to field the position, or they're injured. So the one I went with is just as the fan favorite, somebody I kind of enjoy watching and had high hopes for, is Nate Ebner. The recurring theme this year with rugby players playing football, and you know, he's one of the best rugby players in America anyway. And he's 6 feet tall. He runs a sub 4.5 40. You know, he hits like a little truck, you know, so he's a lot of fun out there. And I really, really hoped that he was going to develop into a starting caliber strong safety when they picked him up. Hasn't really worked out that way, but he's been a core special teams guy and is, you know, fun to watch run around there and run down on kick coverage and light people up.
Ebner doesn't really do much for me. The one guy that's going to make the roster due to injuries that I've been fairly impressed with, that's the wide receiver, Chris Harper, who's also going to be fairly important in the return game for the Patriots early on. You know, I might have been wrong about Zach Sudfeld all those years ago. I may have been wrong about cutting Sammy Morris, although the reasoning behind cutting Sammy Morris, I still stand by. But I did give you a couple years ago another plucky wide receiver that did well during the preseason, and his name is Julian Edelman. So I'm not saying Chris Harper is going to be another Julian Edelman, but I am saying Chris Harper has looked really good this preseason, and he's going to be important on special teams, especially in the return game. So that's the guy that I will be watching tonight.
What about Zach DiRazio, who's a quarterback from Akron converted to play wide receiver? You want to draw parallels?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Yeah, no, he's no good.
Okay.
All right. Who's up next with Cleveland at Chicago?
I'll take it. Chicago has Rashad Lawrence, and interestingly enough, Cleveland super fan has Terrell Pryor as the guy he's hoping to see make it.
That will be interesting, I think. We're all watching the Cleveland quarterback situation. It's the Bears watching, although who knows why. But Terrell Pryor could be a guy that could make things a little more interesting, at least in the backup in the battle for the second spot for sure. By the way, Ryan, our Jaguar super fan, did email me his pick. He mentions wide receiver Brian Walters seemed something of a long shot to make the roster when the offseason began, but his play merits him being the wide receiver 5 this year. And much like I mentioned with Chris Harper, considering his return ability and solid play on special teams, he'll likely beat out Tony Washington. We do Jaguars pick in there. All right. Next up on the list is the Texans at the Cowboys, Greg.
So Brian, the Cowboys super fan, is really excited about the best name in the league, Lucky Whitehead, who apparently is another possession receiver. So he'd be held on the roster to be a backup for Cole Beasley, basically. So that would be interesting to watch. That would make probably Dwayne Harris available if that happened. And then Charles James II is the Texans superfan pick. Apparently from Hard Knocks, he has a not-so-fortunate nickname of Happy Socks over his passion and effort on each play, whatever that means. But those are pretty good names. One's like the King of England, and the other one is Lucky Whitehead. So
those are names to follow. Minnesota, Tennessee, Ron.
I just wanted to back up for a second while you guys were busy drooling over all your New England players. The Giants super fan and submit a George Selvie in there so he gets credit for it. But as far as Minnesota and Tennessee, Minnesota has wide receiver Adam Thielen, again with the pronunciation, and I have nothing for Tennessee.
No, for shame. Feel shame, super fan. Feel shame. Greg, we are at Kansas City at St. Louis.
So I found the Kansas City superfan submission. He is looking to bolster his wide receiver core with Fred Williams, who has 3 passes caught so far this preseason. And apparently has been scoring touchdowns. I'm sorry, 3 touchdown catches this season, preseason already, and 13 overall receptions. So apparently him and Chase Daniels have a great connection.
It appears our Rams super has a deep roster guy. It's Lewis Trinka Passett. He's an unrestricted free agent who has really impressed at defensive tackle. He's played both DT positions, has been making plays all preseason. Somehow he's 2nd on the team in tackles. It's not somehow. He's probably the majority of all these games. His biggest obstacle for making it on the roster, there's so many good players ahead of him. But he's rooting for him to make the final 53. My guess is he'll at least make the practice squad at the very least. Next up is Arizona at Denver. Ron, this okay. would be for you.
I've got for Denver, Ben.
You'll have nothing Garland. For Arizona. I can tell you that.
Yes, I know.
I'm sorry. Repeat the Denver one.
I'm sorry. Ben Garland for there. And like you said, nothing Arizona.
Yeah, that's Drew Brooks, and I haven't been on him, so we really do need to replace the Arizona superfan. If you'd like to be the Cardinals superfan, you can email us, nextfanup@gmail.com. We're taking applications. Greg, San Diego is at San Francisco.
Ken, our experienced and also youngest superfan, has said that he has missed the last 2 games thanks to DirecTV, but that he knows that there's a huge kicking battle going on between Nick Novak and Josh Rambo Lambo, so that'll be interesting. And then, the 49ers superfan has that rugby running back, Jared Haney, who is, you know, the storm, or, you know, taking the preseason by storm. So it'd be exciting to see if he actually makes a 53-man roster for all you fantasy players.
And our last game tonight, Ron, it's Oakland at Seattle.
Our Oakland superfan, Ben Heaney, gosh, I'm horrible, at linebacker. And Seattle has Christian Michael, which is surprising. I wouldn't consider him a deep guy, but maybe he's been – not playing very well since he's been in the league and is on the bubble. So Christian Michael.
I mean, Marshawn Lynch is going to break down sooner or later. I'm just hoping that it's not this season because he's a key on one of my fantasy teams. All right. Well, speaking of fantasy,
there's been talk about Fred Jackson possibly signing with Seattle. I wonder if that would mean get the boot and sign with them.
I was also reading that that move for Fred Jackson might also push up the timeline for Cam Chancellor to rework his deal. Because I was reading that they had to resolve Cam Chancellor's contract to get enough cap to sign Fred Jackson. So that'd be interesting.
Yes, Seattle's definitely got a contract thing to watch. The other thing, since we're mentioning Fred Jackson, formerly of the Buffalo Bills, is I saw that Shady McCoy may not be ready for week one. So it's interesting that the Bills felt that they could cut Fred Jackson. They had to have known at that time that Shady was going to be questionable for week one at the very least. Why you would cut a guy like Fred Jackson?
Well, according to with the Fred Jackson cut, I was reading that some people in Buffalo think the GM went rogue and there's a power struggle going on between Rex Ryan and the GM there. And that the GM might be on his way out because he went out against what everyone wanted.
Well, that would make sense. It's Buffalo. You know, Ron and I can both attest. Buffalo has been a shit itself for many years now. Speaking of a shell and the shell game that I played earlier this morning I love to do this every year. I go game by game and make my prediction who will win and who will lose all the way through the entire 2015 season. And they are ridiculous. I completely admit that. I am in no means a true prognosticator. And clearly there's going to be things that are going to happen midway through the season, towards the end of the season, that will definitely change the course of events as I've mapped them out. But it's still a fun exercise to do just because oftentimes we'll say things like, well, I really love that team. Well, how much do you really love that team? And I bring that up specifically with my my boyfriends down in the NFL South, the Atlanta Falcons. I do love them. I have them going 10-6, but ultimately they are going to miss the playoffs. How crazy is that, gentlemen?
Wow.
It's pretty crazy. They're going to miss the playoffs because there's going to be three teams in the NFC that are all going to go 14-2. And those teams are the Eagles, the Packers, and the Seahawks. I see all three of those teams only losing twice this year. Your wild card teams are going to be the Lions, who will be 10-6. And the Cowboys, who are going to be 11-5, and your other division winner is in the NFC South. I will admit right now, if there's one team that I'm really not feeling being 12-4, it's the New Orleans Saints. I might be a little too high on them. What do you guys think about my NFC thoughts here? What did the superfans think, Greg?
Well, overall, I think the superfans are in agreement with you. Everyone thinks that Green Bay and Seattle will make the playoffs. Kind of differing opinions, of course, if a division winner or wild card, how they get there. But the majority of us think that Green Bay will win their division, with Seattle and Arizona only being contention really out in the West. So you got those two, it sounds like. And then Atlanta, the super fans do have like a split decision, and it's interesting. Our closest vote is probably between Atlanta and New Orleans. They are only separated by two votes, and we have Atlanta winning the division over New Orleans. And then New Orleans missing the playoffs, with Philadelphia winning the East pretty convincingly, and then Dallas and either Minnesota or Detroit holding down the other wild card.
Yeah, I'm not huge on the Vikings. I think I've made that perfectly clear on a number of podcasts. I have them going 6-10 this year. I just don't see it. The Cardinals, who I actually do kind of like there in the West, I only have them at 9-7. They have a much more difficult schedule than I think a lot of people realize. But in the NFC West, the NFC West will also feature
the first pick in the NFL draft.
And that team is the San Francisco 49ers. Their lone victory is going to come in week 17. I do not like the 49ers this year. I'm waiting for another shoe to drop there. Clearly there's something wrong in San Francisco. What do you think of that, Ron?
Yeah, I mean, they kind of look like a mess, but I'm kind of feeling maybe Washington Redskins might be getting that first pick even over San Fran.
Well, I'm glad you brought the Redskins up, because I have them with two victories this season, going 2-14. The only other team, the other teams that I would have in contention for that last pick. Oh, I have the Browns also at 1-15. I have the Raiders at 3-13, the Jaguars at 3-13, and the Bucks at 3-13. And then the next closest teams would be our AFC East run. That would be the Jets at 4-12 and the Bills at 5-11. And as I mentioned at the beginning, you're going to be upset with me. I've got your Dolphins at 8-8.
Yeah, I remember the prediction that you made in the AFC East show a few months back. Before I was on it, I listened to that, and I just think, I thought you actually, this sounds like you came up a little, because I thought I remember you saying the Dolphins in 10. I believe we could pull the audio for that at some point. Sounds like you might have added a couple games maybe after watching the preseason.
Well, I think I also mentioned during those preseason shows that it was much too early for me to be doing this. And yes, the more important part was at some point I had forgotten to keep record of who I had beating whom. And as I was going through each team, I couldn't keep track anymore. I didn't know if my numbers added up. This was me literally this morning going game by game, counting a win and a loss. So I know exactly, well, I don't know exactly because I took horrible notes, but I do have them 8-8. I think they're a little bit better. Where I improved the Patriots for, originally I had the Patriots at 11-5. Losing to the Steelers in week one with Jimmy Garoppolo at center, behind center. Now that Brady's back, Brady's going to be PO'd with a passion. And there's a couple of games, including the kickoff, you're going to want to watch Tom Brady. And it's that one, because he is going to just let it fly, and they're going to put up a ton of points on the Steelers. And so I apologize to you profusely, Greg, because it's going to be a beating.
It's going to be and a the really, other game, really fun super fan battle. So
the other game that you're going to want to watch coming up this season is going to be the Patriots and the Colts, because the Colts are going to get it. They're the ones behind this whole thing, and the Patriots know it. And Belichick knows it, and we've seen him hold grudges before. So I'm hoping for the 72 points. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the Colts are too good to allow 72 points. But it's going to be a doozy of a game. I can tell you that right now. And so, yeah, I moved from 11-5 to 12-4, literally just changing the Pittsburgh game. I do think they've got some other tough opponents this season in the Broncos. I do have them losing to the Dolphins at least once. And
yeah, I mean,
I'm trying to remember some of these other games. So. Yeah, I don't recall some of these other teams. Oh, the Eagles, I have them losing to. And not sure who that other team is. But 12-4 for the Patriots. In the AFC, my first round bye teams are the Colts and the Patriots. Colts with a 13-3 record, the Patriots at 12-4. Your other division winners will be the Steelers, which I have at 11-5. They end up tying with the Ravens at 11-5, but the Steelers will get the tiebreaker. And who is my, the Broncos? I have the Broncos actually at 11-5. I'm a little down on the Broncos. And wildcard teams are the Chargers and the Ravens. I already mentioned the Ravens. I have at 11-5, the Chargers at 9-7, just edge out the Bengals, whom I also have at 9-7. What do the super fans say about that, Greg?
Well, super fans clearly have Indianapolis and New England winning the division pretty handily. With Miami actually had a pretty strong vote for second place in the East, and they're one of the borderline wild card teams. Denver will win the West with San Diego and Kansas City both in contention for a wild card. And then right before the show, we got two extra entries in that push Pittsburgh above Baltimore for the AFC North. But they're separated by one vote. And whoever doesn't win the division will make the wild card. So it's pretty interesting that we only had seven teams not get votes. I was trying to write down what the teams were that no one thinks, not even their superfan thinks, will make the playoffs. And those are the Browns, the Titans, the Bears, the Niners, the Redskins, and the Tampa Bay Bucks. And I'm forgetting a team, and I can't just figure out who it is. So go ahead and tweet at us. Ryan, the Jacksonville fan, picked him to win their division, I think. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
I do have the Bears at 8-8. But I've come down a little bit. Bears, the Titans I have at 4-12. I mentioned the Browns were a contender for the number one pick in the draft at 1-15. The team that I was surprised I wasn't higher on, or maybe even lower on, and I'm just sort of on, is the Texans at 8-8. I think their season can go either way, and it feels like I'm, you know, riding in the middle of the road, but I did go game by game, and that's what it came up to, 8-8. So they are middle of the road. I think the Texans are sort of your median in the NFL season. So as I look at my playoff matchups, I have the Lions at the Packers and the Saints at the Cowboys. I have the Cowboys winning to go on to face the Seahawks. I have the Packers winning to go on to face the Eagles. I have the Packers upsetting the Eagles and the Seahawks winning. And then I have the Packers upsetting the Seahawks in Seattle going to the Super Bowl. In the AFC, I have the Steelers hosting the Ravens, the Broncos hosting the Chargers. The Broncos go on to face the Patriots. The Ravens go on to face the Colts. The Patriots will get upset by the Broncos in Foxborough. The Ravens will upset the Colts in Indianapolis. So we'll have the Broncos and the Ravens in the championship with the Broncos going to the Super Bowl. So I foresee a Packers-Broncos Super Bowl and Peyton chokes again. Green Bay comes away with Super Bowl 50. What do the super fans say, Greg?
Well, we do have Green Bay playing Indianapolis in the Super Bowl with other with Seattle and Baltimore getting a lot of votes. And I was surprised that Pittsburgh and Philadelphia Super Bowl didn't get more traction. That'd be great for the Keystone State. But anyways, with our eventual Super Bowl champion, actually 11 superfans thought that the Colts would make it to the Super Bowl, but we only had three of them that actually thought they'd win. So the Packers, actually, we have seven superfans that think the Packers will win the Super Bowl this year, which was by far the most. So you're pretty smart, Jay.
Well, I have my finger on the pulse of the super fans, except getting them to actually send in their work like they're supposed to and ignoring this fantasy football league that you guys are going to be doing next week. Ron, what are your thoughts here on how do you see thinking out? I know you're not liking the AFC the way I've got it shaped up.
No, actually, I want to kick over. You mentioned that you felt that the Packers was an upset, would not be an upset. Now, I understand that Philly is going to look very good against bad teams. They're going to look very good in the NFC because the NFC doesn't have the strongest defenses like some of the teams in the AFC does. But when you get into the playoffs, they're better defenses. And when you run the kind of offense like this and you get stopped more often in the playoffs and get your team off the field, your offense off the field, your defense on the field more often. And in the last 2 years, Philly has been at the bottom of the league in time of possession. So it may look flashy in the regular season, but when it comes to playoff, not going to work, and it's not going to be winning football. And that's the reason why I feel that would not be an upset and why Philly is probably just going to lose their first game in the playoffs, no matter who they play, because they're going to actually play a playoff caliber defense.
Hmm. That's fair. Those are all fair points. The Eagles, I think, are going to beat a lot of teams during the regular season. And like I've given them upset there in their first round matchup. Greg, we also had the super fans submit their predictions for the postseason awards. Who do the super fans have listed as our NFL MVP and some of our other winners this year?
I'll tell you the truth, Paul. We need a couple more days on that one, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay.
They were kind of added after the fact, and we only have we only have 18 votes right now compared to the schedule.
Oh, that's not enough.
24. Yeah.
So although that's technically more than 50%.
Yeah.
Fair enough. You know what? I have a feeling that there's not going to be a lot for Mark to recap on Sunday night. So this is the perfect fodder for Mark Sitko for the Sunday recap show. So it's a great tease here. We'll tease you, ladies and gentlemen. You'll have to tune in Sunday night to find out who the super fans have picked for postseason awards. By the way, my vote right now for NFL MVP is Tom Brady, and all other awards are maybe Coach of the Year, Bill Belichick, Comeback Player of the Year, also Tom Brady, because he had to come back from such a low point this preseason. I mean, seriously, Tom Brady wins everything. What do you think? Can we make that happen? Or is that outrageous? The silence tells me it's outrageous.
Yep.
So with that, and so on that note, I'd like to thank Patrick, who is still busy reading the decision by the wonderful Richard Berman, the judge in New York who has freed Tom Brady. I'm going to have to frame that T-shirt now. I do own a Free Brady T-shirt. I'd like to thank you, Ron, for being a sport and dealing with Patrick and I, crowing from the top of the rooftops. Thank you, Ron, for being here today.
Thank you.
And Greg, thank you too for running the poll and telling us how the super fans for the season's going to play out.
It was fun, and looking forward to my battle next week with Sir Patrick there for the kickoff of the season. It's going to be a fun game with Brady playing now. So I'd rather see
yes,
guys
let me
with Brady than without. So.
Well, I don't think you're going to beat us with Brady, but we'll see. Let me map things out for you folks. So Sitka will be back with Sunday. So the Monday morning tradition will be ready for you with a recap show. And as I mentioned, he will also go over the season ballots, who the super fans think are going to win each award. I believe after that, there will be a fantasy draft being held by the super fans that you'll be able to tune in and listen to here on Next Fan Up. If you want more details on that, you'll have us on Twitter at NFU Podcast or on Facebook. It's facebook.com/NFU Podcast or just search Next Fan Up on Facebook and you'll find us pretty easily. You can also send us emails. We're looking for a Cardinals super fan, nextfanup@gmail.com. As Greg said, starting next week on Thursdays, you're going to hear at least, maybe more, but at least three super fan battles during our preview shows. That's where each super fan of a team will go one-on-one, counterpoint, debate type style battle over who they believe is going to win each. So you'll most factual preview of each game. I cannot say how factual it'll be. I'm just making up words now off the top of my head. And those will be every Thursday. We'll still preview every single game, but there'll be at least three games. The Battle of the Superfans, as Greg mentioned, kicking off the season will be Steelers at Patriots. And so that is a guaranteed game to be featured next week. I'm Plod Vader, and I always like to end this show with there you have and Coach Jeff Fisher.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.